Blog Talk Radio.
Everybody, James Bostic here, Conservative Perspective on Patriot Nation Radio Network here at Blog Talk Radio Studios. We do this twice a week. We do it live, 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on Tuesdays, which is tonight, and Thursdays, which will be the night after tomorrow night. We also do a recorded version for the Talk America Radio Network, and you can tune in to ACP there as well as a host of other outstanding programs and talk radio personalities at talkamericaradio.org. They have two streams that you can listen to, the Liberty and the Justice stream. ACP is on both of those and various and sundry places throughout the world wide web of danger and intrigue. Okay. As usual, we live in interesting times. Today, well, no, actually, it's yesterday, you probably heard by now about the FBI raid on the office, home, and Manhattan hotel room of President Trump's longtime lawyer, Michael Cohen. This was done at the direction of a rogue independent prosecutor, and it is the latest outrage in an out-of-control investigation aimed at reversing the results of the 2016 election. Now, before we get too deep into this, and we are going to talk about this. Last week, I think it was Wednesday or Thursday, on Sean Hannity's program, there were a couple of remarkably keen legal minds in the persons of Alan Dershowitz, the last liberal with principles in the media, perhaps the last liberal with principles in existence, period, and a former U.S. attorney, Joe DiGenova. And they had some pretty serious comments that I'm going to set up for you now. Let me go over here. It's kind of a long clip. It's a little wordy. It's about seven, almost 8 minutes. But again, sometimes I hate well, I don't hate to do it because it's the best way. It's much more important that you get the gist of what's going on and you hear these folks in their words rather than me, you know, inarticulately trying to paraphrase it. So this is last Wednesday or Thursday, Alan Dershowitz, Joe DeGeneva on the Sean Hannity program. Give this a good listen.
All right, joining us now with more reaction to our opening monologue, the author of the best-selling book, Trumped Up, How Criminalization of Political Differences Endangers Democracy, Professor Alan Dershowitz, and former U.S. Attorney for the District of Columbia, Joe DeGeneva, two of the smartest lawyers in the country. You know, last night I got such incredible reaction to your comments. Collusion's not a crime, but we go from collusion to obstruction to then bank records. He's not a target. But the media is like, well, he's not a target, but he's still in jeopardy. It's like there's no winning here.
I have to tell you, if after a year of very thorough investigation and going after all the low-hanging fruit and getting people not only to sing, but some of them even perhaps to compose, if they couldn't have shifted him from a subject to a target, there's nothing there.
What are they hoping?
Of course they're hoping, but I think they understand that. Now they're going after very, very weak issues, collusion. I challenge Mueller to tell me what statute is violated by collusion. There's a memo now by Rosenstein authorizing him to investigate collusion with the Russians by Manafort. But you can't investigate sins. You can only investigate federal crimes, and there is no such federal crime as collusion.
How do they not know that?
They know it, but they hope that by investigating collusion, they'll get somebody to obstruct justice, to commit perjury, to commit one of these other peripheral crimes. As they always say, it's in the cover-up, but it's not the cover-up. It's that prosecutors induce cover-ups, which is why innocent people shouldn't be testifying unless they absolutely have to, because you can be indicted for perjury even if you tell the truth. If you say something and somebody else says a different thing.
That's a spectacular statement. Yeah. You can be indicted for perjury even if you tell the truth.
That's right, because if somebody contradicts you and the prosecutor believes the person contradicting you, you're indicted for perjury even though you told the truth.
I'm going to get back to that question in just a second. Let me go to Joe DeGeneva. Joe, Rod Rosenstein issues this letter to Mueller.
Mm-hmm.
Allowing him to go after Paul Manafort the way he did a week after they did the raid. Now, why do I think the order of that legally needs to be reversed?
Well, let's say this, first of all, about Rod Rosenstein. His conduct from the beginning of this has been a disgrace, legally and every other way. He is an embarrassment to the administration. It is truly too bad that he cannot be fired. But let's be very clear about this. The president has never been a target. The fact that he has been recently notified that he is a subject means absolutely nothing. He is not even a subject. He is a witness. A subject is a person whose conduct is within the scope of the grand jury's investigation. What the hell does that mean? It means they don't have anything on him. There have been 19 criminal cases, not one piece of evidence against the president of the United States. And now we are told that Mueller wants to interview the president of the United States, who knows nothing, who has been a witness to nothing, who is not a target of the investigation. What we are seeing now is conduct by two public officials, Robert Mueller and Rod Rosenstein, that is unethical, unprofessional, an embarrassment to the United States government, and is undermining equal enforcement of the law.
Oh, there's no doubt.
Because of what they are doing to a president of the United States. Rod Rosenstein single-handedly has taken away from the sitting president of the United States 16 months of his presidency by his incompetent and fearful conduct. You know why Rod Rosenstein appointed Mueller? Because he didn't want to make the tough decisions that you'd have to make if you were supervising a case being run by a United States attorney like Huber. Rod Rosenstein is a coward. He's a disgrace to the Department of Justice. It's a shame that the president cannot fire him because of the political consequences.
They can't fire him, but it's amazing that he hasn't been recused. After all, he is the main witness on whether or not collusion or whether or not obstruction of justice occurred with the firing of Comey. And he wrote the memo.
Doesn't the president have absolute right to fire anybody?
Well, he does. But, you know, politically, there's a difference between having the right to do it and it being right to do it. I just want to comment on one thing that Joe said. He's absolutely right that they have deprived the president of the opportunity to govern. But the Republicans did the same thing to Clinton. when they impeached him, they knew they were never going to get him removed from the Senate.
At least it was 60 years into his presidency.
Well, but still, they made a mistake, and I think they paid a heavy consequence for it. I think the Democrats would pay a heavy cost if they made the same mistake, trying to impeach without being able to remove.
I want to ask...
By the way, I want to say something about this notion that Mueller wants to question the president. What does he want to question him about?
All right, this is my
First
question,
of all,
though,
he
Joe.
He cannot question him about the firing of Comey. That is an Article II constitutional
Absolutely.
Authority that the president
mm-hmm.
has to fire Comey. He had every right to fire Flynn. Suppose they say, what were you thinking when you fired Comey? What were you thinking when
what
you fired Flynn?
What kind of question
Flynn?
Is that?
Well, by the
these,
way,
these are the kind of stupid questions
right, let
that
me,
could
let me
be
throw
asked.
Off this question to both
this
of you.
This is a perjury trap, plain and simple.
I agree with
this
the perjury
nonsense.
Trap point.
Mm-hmm. This is absolutely
right.
outrageous.
But
it should end right now.
Here's the question I have, because I'm sure Robert Mueller does want to question the president. So,
Definitely.
Professor,
yeah.
I would advise him not to. I don't have your experience.
Well,
but to me, it's
questions.
A trap.
Here's the
written
problem.
Questions.
Here's the problem.
Questions.
Joe, one second. Okay. Hang on, Professor.
Here's the problem. The special counsel has the power to put him in front of a grand jury without a lawyer. So he has some leverage. What I would suggest, and the president might consider this, is if he's asked the question, why did you fire Comey, his answer is, you're not allowed to ask me or question any Article II decision I make. Just like you can't question senators for their vote, you can't question justices for their vote. If I acted within the authority of Article II, I cannot be compelled or asked why I did something.
Would you advise this president to say no to any interview?
Well, I'm not advising the president.
No, I know you're
giving
not.
Giving general statements.
Would you
yes.
advise the president?
I would suggest that it would be best if the president refused to answer certain questions that intruded on his Article II powers.
Last word, Joe. Same question.
The president should not agree to an interview, in my opinion, and I'm not giving him legal advice. I'm talking on this show. The president should, at the most, answer written questions in a very limited area, and he should never, ever be interviewed. This is an abomination.
And even if it
and
means
a
year-long fight over executive privilege, that battle should be waged.
In my opinion, the president should not sit down for an interview. He can answer written questions in a
right.
very limited area, maybe 10, 12 questions.
But what if he's
tops.
Subpoenaed? What if he's subpoenaed in front of the grand jury? What would he do
then?
I
think what you do at that point is you have to argue Article II. And if Bob Mueller wants to take the president of the United States, who is not involved in any of the 19 charges that he has brought thus far, into a court over testimony, I think that would be one of the most disgraceful periods in American history. Absolutely outrageous.
You guys are amazing. I want you guys on every night. This is really important commentary. Thank you both.
And it's rare that Joe and I agree about anything.
I know. That,
today we agree.
We didn't
today,
agree a long
today,
time ago.
Today,
agree on
today
most
it's
things.
Perfection.
Sean Hannity with Alan Dershowitz, Joe DiGenova. Now, again, what these guys were talking about that has happened with Mueller and this lynch mob, this witch hunt team that he's got together, this was last weekend. Now, on Monday, again, longtime President Trump lawyer Michael Cohen, the FBI comes in, they raid his home, they raid his office, they raid his hotel room in Manhattan, and the president says it is a disgrace. Pure and simple, a witch hunt. It's an attack, he further said, on our country in a true sense. It's an attack on what we all stand for. The thinking is, the pundits say that, you know, there's a lot of speculation out there that this particular act is going to be something that is going to be enough to provoke the president into firing Bob Mueller. And if you'll notice, the president has said very little about that publicly, and I'm sure they probably talked about it, but you know, in a public forum, he has said precious little about it. Some people think that if he did fire Mueller, that it could lead to some sort of a constitutional crisis. Joe DeGenova is right when he said that the Mueller investigation has robbed President Trump of the first 16 months of his first term. And it's been divisive. It's cost him people in the White House, in the administration, people that would have probably been pretty effective in their posts had they not got caught up in this witch hunt. So we'll see what happens. And that's what the president says. Many people have said you should fire him. Again, they found nothing, the president said, and in finding nothing, that's a big statement. Former Attorney General Eric Holder has threatened violent unrest, actually, if Trump fires Mueller. He said it is an absolute red line, the firing of Bob Mueller or crippling the special counsel's office if he's removed or meaningfully tampered with. There must be mass, popular, peaceful support of both of them. The American people must be seen and heard. They will ultimately be determinative. Excuse me. When radicals, like Eric Holder said, they want peaceful protests, they're lying. A nonviolent leftist demonstration is almost a contradiction in terms. Holder doesn't care if people get killed as long as his preferred political objective is achieved. He's absolutely fine with riots and arson as long as they're carried out for the right reasons, and that would be the leftist agenda. So the U.S. Attorney's Office in the Southern District of New York had investigators execute this search warrant, and they seized records on the $130,000 non-disclosure payment that Cohen made to porn star Stormy Daniels just before the last election. She claims to have had a thing with Trump a long, long time ago. So they took a computer, they took financial records, and attorney-client communications. Now, this is important. Attorney-client communications. They're also looking at him for possible bank fraud and campaign finance violations and, you know, whatever else they can sling the stick up on the wall. So what this is, this raid, this shakedown of Michael Cohen, this is part of the Barack Obama-led anti-democratic insurgency that has continued to this day, since the election, to try and oust the duly elected 45th president of the United States from the White House. Democrats and a few Republicans on Capitol Hill, more than a few really, just can't believe that Hillary Clinton got flattened by Donald Trump in a fair fight. Everything was fixed. It was all locked. And then 63 million Americans said, no. And they elected Donald Trump president of the United States. So they've got this special prosecutor who's been doing this, like DeGenova said. They've been monkeying this with this whole thing since he was a candidate. Since Donald Trump was a candidate, 16 months, man, this has gone on forever. They haven't found a thing. Last month, Robert Mueller informed the president's lawyers, his legal team, just like I said, the president was not a subject of this investigation. This is a criminal investigation. And if he is not a subject of the criminal investigation, then we can reasonably determine that they haven't been able to scrape up anything near enough evidence to prove the non-federal crime, you know, the federal non-crime of collusion or anything else. But they can't stop. They've got to keep going. They simply cannot believe, and you know, they know where the real collusion took place. We've broken that down a million times. They come up with this dossier that goes back and forth between the Clinton campaign and Cody Shearer and Bruce Orr at the State Department, and they funnel this information through the State Department into the hands of Brian Steele, who's working with Fusion GPS, where Bruce Orr from the State Department has his wife, Nellie, who works as working the Russian angle on different things that happen out there in the world news-wise, working for GPS. Steele takes this stuff that they say happened, and he goes over to the USSR, he goes to Russia, and he talks to people who have been in and out of the Soviet government, maybe low-level or mid-level KGB types or FSB, which is what, you know, the KGB is now, the Federal Security Bureau or something like that. And he shows them his information, and they go, "Da, we have been trying to get Trump for years." And then he pays them thousands of dollars, and they go and they tell, you know, they tell Jacob and they tell Dmitry, you know, we can fleece this American who has considerably more dollars than cents and maybe screw up some things in their election. It's going to be okay. So they do it. And so they manufacture this product. This is product. It's manufactured. It's not collated. It's not disseminated. It's not even analyzed. It's manufactured out of whole cloth. It is a lie, this dossier. So they take this dossier, Fusion GPS, and the people in the Democrat National Committee and the people in the Hillary Clinton campaign and all these other people that I have named to this point. You know what? I really ought to send out a program, because you can't tell the players without a program. And that's the honest to God truth. But these names that I've mentioned, these are all part of that web. So then they take this information from Fusion GPS, and Christopher Steele, who coincidentally is an FBI informant, delivers through some convoluted methodology that they use to get this stuff into the hands of the FBI, who treat it as bona fide. They treat it as the genuine article. They treat it as the gospel. Now, do they know that it is not the gospel? Do they know that it is product? Yes. There are those who know. It's kind of compartmentalized. But I'm sure there were people in the upper levels of the FBI and in the Justice Department at that time who knew that this was product. Now, here's the thing. If we can take this product, if we can take this dossier, think the conspirators, and we can present it to the FISA court, the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act courts, then perhaps if we stretch it and massage it just right, we can sell the FISA courts into granting us electronic surveillance warrants on somebody within the campaign. The Trump campaign. And through that, we have an ear to their strategy, to what they're going to do, thus ensuring an even greater chance of us fixing now, instead of the Democrat national primary to get Hillary the nomination, they want to fix the federal election so that they can give Hillary Clinton the presidency. No, this ain't Tom Clancy. This isn't Ian Fleming. This isn't Arthur Conan Doyle. This isn't anybody. This isn't fiction. This is what's happening. Now, that's a conspiracy. You're looking to overthrow and subvert the results. First, you want to circumvent. You want to fix it so your person wins, but failing that, now you're looking for methods to bring down the presidency, to overthrow the duly elected government. So we got a couple other guys. We got James Comey, at that time head of the FBI. Christopher Wray, deputy director. Rod Rosenstein, who DeGeneva and Dershowitz were just talking about. And knowing what they know and being committed to their ideology, they acted. They took this product and they presented it to the FISA courts, of which Assistant Attorney General Rod Rosenstein is a member of. Now, we don't know exactly how they explained the nature of this product to the FISA courts. It's a pretty safe bet that they didn't say, well, we got this from some friends of ours in the Hillary Clinton campaign, and they passed it along to some of their people at the State Department, who further passed it along to this former British intelligence cat who's now just a self-promoter. And we got it back. And well, what's it say? Well, it says here that the last, you know, when Donald Trump was in Russia, he hired a bunch of hookers to pee on the bed that allegedly Barack and Michelle slept in the same hotel, whatever. So anyway, they come up with this craziness. And they pass it off as real. They pass it off as bona fide. And they're successful in passing it off. Now, we don't know if the judge... We don't know what the judge was told, in other words. We don't know why, you know, what information the judge was given in order to base his decision on allowing electronic surveillance to take place of Carter Hall. And he was like a third-level Trump volunteer guy. So, yeah, he would have had access to some stuff, but they just needed an in, and they got it through Carter Hall and everyone he talked to. So since they can't fix the election, they try to overthrow the government. And they try to overthrow the government through this particular pathway with collusion, which is not a crime. Conspiring. Evil thoughts, basically. Where you have the actual collusion, which is the information being passed from the Clinton campaign and the Democrat National Committee, along with money to Fusion GPS and Christopher Steele. Now we have paid agents. Christopher Steele, Fusion GPS are paid agents of the Democrat National Committee and the Hillary Clinton campaign. And where is Christopher Steele going? He, Mr. and Mrs. America and all the ships at sea, is going to Russia. What's he going to do? Well, he's going to talk about this whole Trump hooker PP thing. And we're going to try and build it up. We're going to see what's there. And if we can make it look like what we can make it look like, well, then we'll be okay. So if you want the collusion, there you have it. And they got the Bank of Scotland's records to back this up because they were subpoenaed. And it went, and Perkins & Coie, the law firm, that was the law firm that funneled the money from the DNC and from the Hillary Clinton campaign, hundreds of thousands of dollars went from the coffers of the DNC and the Clinton campaign war chest into this law firm, Perkins & Coie, who then transferred the money into the pockets of Fusion GPS, who funded Christopher Steele, who's talking to the Russian guys. Somehow Mueller doesn't see this, and he is given wide range to investigate wherever the truth would lead, one would imagine. But he is elected upon this path and fundamentally turned a blind eye to all the crimes that Hillary Clinton has committed. There are no Republicans on Robert Mueller's investigative team. None. Some of them have, they're unscrupulous lawyers who have frequently been overturned by superior courts. It's a necktie party. It's a lynch mob And you know, and they're looking seriously. They're looking to bring down this presidency. They want to do anything they can that they think may give them leverage to bring about impeachment proceedings against the president of the United States. That's pretty serious. That's pretty damn serious. Well, down to the bottom of the hour, so we're gonna take a quick break, and we're gonna find something to listen to while I grab something to drink, and we'll be back with more of a conservative's perspective here on the Patriot Nation Radio Network. Back after this.
Charlie's got the blues. not a kid at 33. You play around, you lose your wife. You play too long, you lose your life. I got my pills to ease the pain. Can't find a thing to ease the rain. I'd love to try and settle down, but everybody's leaving town. Some gotta win, some gotta lose. Good time, Charlie, just blue. Good time, Charlie, just blue. Good time, Charlie, just blue.
Hopefully, we're back. Conservative perspective here on the Patriot Nation Radio Network. And as we told you at the top of the hour, you know, we do this twice a week live, and that's Tuesdays and Thursdays, 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Thursdays, we're back-to-back with the proprietor of the Patriot Nation Radio Network, and that's, of course, Mark Hoffman. Mark has a show that he does Mondays, and then he and I are back-to-back on Thursdays with Patriot Nation Radio Live, and he does a simulcast with a couple different outlets. Plus, you can catch him on Facebook. He does a Facebook video that goes along with the broadcast that you can pick up here at Blog Talk, Lord Willin, and River Don't Rise. A follow-up, some of the names that we talked about there in this remarkably weedy mess that we've been talking about for a while now, because it just keeps unfolding, and you know, it's like those what do they call them? I think it's Ninotchka, those Russian, you know, you open it up, there's another one, you open it up, there's another one, and it just keeps going and going and going, and it drives you crazy. Devin Nunes, who a couple of months ago was responsible for setting these things in motion by releasing the Nunes memo from the House Permanent Select Committee on Intelligence, has he's got some other things going on. And this time, and this is what's interesting, because as we've been talking about this, the root, the crux, the linchpin, the keystone of this whole thing is this dossier, this product that we talked about in the first part of the program. Now, it is this product, and again, all this stuff is manufactured. It's not coalesced, it's not distilled, it's not collected, it's manufactured. One of Stalin's guys back in the old days, one of Stalin's guys that helped take care of things, was a guy named Lavrenty Beria. And Lavrenty Beria was probably, he was significant in the intelligence arm of the Communist Party, Stalin's party. He was the intelligence guy, and he was responsible for the NKVD, for the GRU, then later the KGB, and of course what it is today. But he had his saying was, "You show me the man, I'll produce the crime. I'll show you the crime." So this is the product. This dossier is what led the FISA courts to agree to the electronic surveillance of this cat named Carter Hall, this mid-level worker drone in the Trump campaign. And through this cat, they go and they find out, you know, they get an ear for what's going on. Well, Representative Nunes, who is chairman of the House Permanent Select Committee on Intelligence, that's a pretty big deal. He sent a letter, see if you remember this name, to Deputy Attorney General Rod Rosenstein and FBI Director Christopher Wray that instructed them to produce unredacted copies of the documents that the FBI used as the basis to officially open up its Russia investigation. So what would those documents be? Those documents would be the same documents that were presented to the FISA court in order to get the wiretap permit. So that would mean that those documents are the Steele dossier. Now, this is significant because an FBI investigation of a presidential candidate that was begun right in the middle of a presidential campaign, apparently as an insurance policy, as the texts of FBI shagmates Peter Strzok and Lisa Page suggested, it's kind of like really extremely uncommon. We'll just go ahead and call it unprecedented in a democratic system. Yeah, it might happen in Venezuela. It might happen in Paraguay. It might happen in some banana republic, some third world tin pot pseudo democracy. Anyway, if this thing were about anything, this probe, the pretext for this collusion thing, if it were about anything but something serious about national security, it would clearly be seen as an FBI abuse of power. The investigation also amounted to building the material that led to the special counsel. All this goes back to that dossier where they start screaming collusion with the Russians. So, again, the dossier that the FBI has and those documents are the same documents that the FBI presented. And there's a couple of different fail safes in here. And there are only, when it comes to the electronic surveillance, there are only a couple of people, only a couple, who can sign off and these things actually get done, okay, that have the juice to, you know, their signature says make it so. And that's the judge that they presented it to. And as a counter signature, there has to be someone from the Justice Department, someone high up in the Justice Department, someone, oh, I don't know, really high, say like Deputy Attorney General, who was and is Rod Rosenstein. Stein. They say it all kinds of different ways. The same cat that we were talking about in the top of the show that's embroiled in this. Devin Nunes, out of all the people in Washington, is probably the right guy to be doing this, to send this subpoena, because he's, again, the guy that confirmed that all this stuff, this cooked up dossier, was the premise for this collusion investigation. Now, the FBI is slow walking this stuff, because what Nunes wants is the unredacted documents. Now, what does that mean? That means that none of the words are blacked out. None of the paragraphs are blacked out. He wants to see the documents themselves. Now, if the FBI were smart about this, they'd just hand over the document and just take the hit. If mistakes were made, then mistakes were made. The organization has already seen somewhat of a turnover in the leadership with the firings of Andrew McCabe, James Comey. They should be on safe grounds. And by that, I mean anything that happens now, they can blame on Comey and McCabe. Well, that was the old FBI, guys, and they, well, those fellas just weren't good, were they? They did some bad things, and we're the new FBI, and we're new and improved, and we don't like what those guys did, and we're not going to do those kind of things. You can trust us. But for some reason, even with new director Christopher Wray, a presumed conservative at the helm of the organization, they don't want to do that. Now, why? Was it because too many officials were involved in the partisanship instead of being focused on national security? And who's going to need to be fired? Because people need to be fired. Some people need to go to – this is huge, guys. Okay? This is up there with – seriously, this is up there with Hydra, Captain America, the Winter Soldier. No joke. This is evil. This is evil at its most evilest, doing their evility. And this is bad stuff. And people are going to have to go to jail. People are going to have to get fired. People are going to have to lose their pensions, more than just Andy McKay. Is it because political operatives, as we've talked about earlier with the Democrat National Committee or the Clinton campaign, were involved? Is it because the work was sloppy? Is it because there's probably some new embarrassing detail that's going to come out, and they don't want it to come out? It's hard to say. I don't know. But Devin Nunes seems to know. It's believed, and the talk is around D.C., of those people who know stuff, that he has seen at least some of the documents, and from that has decided there is reason to pry them in their entirety out. And if nothing else, in doing this, we will be forcing the FBI to end its partisanship. Do you guys understand when we say weaponized? That's what we're talking about. The FBI at this stage in the game, through 8 years of Obama people being embedded in key places, again, Hydra, the FBI, what should be the nation's premier impartial and objective law enforcement agency, has been weaponized by one political ideology to circumvent the legitimate operations of another political party. To unseat the existing government. To countermand, to overrule your vote. To subjugate the will of the people. There's nothing more un-American than that. Nothing. The Bureau has slow walked this stuff back in these requests, and they're going to do it again this time. They really don't have anything to gain from this. They really don't, because I don't think that Devin Nunes is going to be a guy who gives up, especially given the headway, the inroads that he's made at this point with the things that you've seen in the Nunes memo that was released a couple months back. Again, we are still waiting, and it's making me crazy, to be perfectly honest with you. We're still waiting on the Inspector General's report to be released from the Department of Justice. This thing's going to be huge. I'm convinced of that. It's going to be monstrous. It's going to be Hydra. Well, I promised we were going to talk about guns, and I'm not going to talk about guns, but Ernest Volokh, who is a law professor, and this comes up, you know, the shootings that have come up. First of first thing that happens is, you know, rather than target the shooter and his motivation, they want to put the target on the backs of a law-abiding Second Amendment guys. Now, here at ACP, we are 2A all the way, as it is written. And as you know, I'm a big fan of Prager University and their five-minute lecture series, and they bring in remarkably erudite and intelligent people, very thoughtful people, and they just take all these different things, politics, culture, religion, differences between left and right, all this everyday stuff that's kind of important to know, and they coalesce it down into these 4 to 6, 6.5 minute little monologues. And we have one today again from, I think it's Ernest Volokh, professor of law at Berkeley, I believe. Here we go.
Does an American citizen have a constitutional right to own a gun? Here's what the Second Amendment says. A well-regulated militia, being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms, shall not be infringed. Now, it once seemed to me like that language only protected state militias and not individuals. Indeed, this is the view held by the 4 dissenting Supreme Court justices in the 2008 case of District of Columbia versus Heller, a landmark case dealing with gun ownership. But the more research I did, the more I came to realize that my initial view was mistaken, and that the founders were in fact securing an individual right. The 5 justices who voted to affirm the right to own a gun in D.C. versus Heller had indeed made the correct decision. Let's look at the amendment one more time. A well-regulated militia, being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms, shall not be infringed. We first need to focus on the phrase, the right of the people. Note that the people are the only ones whose right is secured here, not the militia or a state government. This phrase, the right of the people, comes up a few times in the Constitution. For example, the First Amendment refers to the right of the people peaceably to assemble and to petition the government. And the Fourth Amendment secures the right of the people to be secure against unreasonable searches and seizures. Why then, if the authors of the Constitution felt so strongly about the right of the people to own guns, did they include language about a well-regulated militia? These opening words of the amendment might be called a justification clause. Such clauses are used to help explain why a right is being secured. But it's the operative clause that explains what right is being secured. In this case, the right of the people to keep and bear arms. And what was the word militia understood to mean at the time? Well, the Militia Act of 1792 defined militia to mean all white males 18 to 45. Today, of course, militia would include women and people of all races. But it was clearly not a reference to a small National Guard-type group. And what about the part of the amendment that says a militia is necessary to the security of a free state? What, the opponents of personal gun ownership ask, does a personal right of gun ownership have to do with that? Again, historical context is key. In the 1790s, the phrase free state wasn't used to mean an individual state like New York or Rhode Island. Rather, it meant what we'd call today a free country, a nation free of despotism. A free state is what the framers wanted America to be. They saw an armed citizenry as in part a hedge against tyranny. Citizens who own weapons can protect themselves, prevent tyrants from seizing power, and protect the nation from foreign enemies. This does not mean, though, that this right is unlimited. Free speech, for example, has long been subject to some narrow and reasonable regulations. But severe restrictions on owning a gun, like severe restrictions on free speech, would violate the Second Amendment as the founders understood it. Maybe you think this understanding of the Second Amendment is outdated today, that the Constitution needs to change as public attitudes change. The founders included a provision for doing just that. If the public attitude really has changed, the Constitution can be amended to reflect that change. But ironically, even if we focus on current public attitudes, the case for individual gun ownership is as strong as ever. Polls consistently show that over 2/3 of Americans believe that the Second Amendment secures the right of citizens to own a gun. And Congress and state governments have repeatedly reaffirmed this view, including in recent decades. So, does the Second Amendment secure an individual right to bear arms? It did when it was written, it has throughout American history, and it does today. I'm Eugene Volokh, professor of law at UCLA for Prager University.
To subscribe to our YouTube channel, click here. To help keep our videos free, donate here.
Great stuff from Prager University, and I encourage you, if you can, you can toss them a little money here and there. That's not a bad thing to do, because these guys, they're doing the Lord's work. Let me put it that way. So back to the gun thing. I came across this book this week, and I'm really impressed with it so far. I've enjoyed reading it. I got it at a discount store, you know, cutout thing. It's called The Conservative's Handbook, and it's written by a guy named Phil Valentine. And Phil's a radio guy. He's a syndicated talk show host, and he's a heavyweight. And this is a terrific book. And it's the way it's set up is it takes all of these issues that mean something to conservatism, you know, conservatives, and he breaks them down, and he breaks them down in very cogent, digestible, easy to understand points. And that's the great thing about it. And the really cool thing is you don't have to start at the beginning and read all the way through. You can look through it. Chapter 3, for example, character, the single most important attribute in a leader. And then he breaks that down further. Chapter 4, drug legalization will cripple America. And he presents his case as to why he says it. But there's also a chapter in here concerning guns. It's called Guns Are Good. And guns are good. There were 16 school shootings in America from the years 1977 to 1995. Now, that's an average of less than one per year. Now, in 1995, a federal law was passed banning guns within 1,000 feet of a school, including permitted concealed handguns. Now, in the two-year period between 1997 and 1998, there were 5 public school shootings. It's also interesting to note that in that period we talked about from 1977 to 95, during which these 16 school shootings took place, 15 of those shootings took place where the states did not have right to carry laws. Whoa, we are down and out. We can't get into much more of it. Look, here's the deal. An armed society is a polite society. You know why? Because nobody goes around sticking their nose in anybody's business for fear of getting the damn thing blasted off. Now, that's kind of putting it primitively, but I think you get the idea. If it is common knowledge that every home in a given – thank you, Guinevere – that every home in a given area not only has weapons inside them, but residents who are trained in how to use those weapons and will act without hesitation in defense of their home and family, you're not going to see too many home invasions. You're not going to see too many break-ins. You're going to see a lot of dead dudes that tried it, which is going to serve as a deterrent to other aspirants to that. We're down at the bottom. Thanks so much for joining us. ACP is heard here live Tuesdays, Thursdays, 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Throughout the week on the Liberty or the Justice streams at talkamericaradio.org. Go there. Outstanding programming, outstanding hosts. ACP is humbled and honored to be a part of it. You guys take care. We'll be talking to you Thursday, taking a look at things as we do through a conservative's perspective. You guys take care.